August 17, 2022. It's a Wife and Pedro show.
Oh, I would, I tell you. I believe that a man ought to, or here to grow themselves into the full, into the best good that they can be. At least this is what I want to do. And, you know, this is my belief, that we are supposed to, I am supposed to go to the best good that I can get to. And when I, as I, as I'm going there, becoming this, and when I become, if I ever become, it, this will just come out of the horn. So whatever it's gonna, whatever that's going to be, that's what it will be. I'm not in, so much interested in trying to say what it's going to be. I don't know. But I just hope, I realize that good can only bring good.
Wife and Pedro show happy Tuesday, Brother Matt.
Wednesday.
Is it Wednesday?
Wednesday.
Yeah,
it is
Wednesday.
Yes, it's
Mercury.
Wednesday. I don't know what number it is.
Hercules, I think, for Mercury, huh?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Germans, I think, call it middle of the week.
Oh, shit, yeah, midweek or something
Joe,
like that.
Not men alone, Brother Matt. We got somebody from Austin, Texas.
Yeah, welcome.
Just visiting. And it's Chris Spencer, Brooklyn Board.
Yeah, welcome.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks.
Absolutely, Chris. Long time ago. Been a fan of yours.
And cool. Hey, I wanted to ask you, how's it going playing with Flipper?
Oh, I've done, I've done it two ways. There was 3 years ago, I helped him with a Europe tour, and David Yao was doing the spiel, and now I did two gigs with them as Power Trio.
Yeah, I want to check it out.
Yeah, so it's
cool.
A little different.
It's cool.
But you went to the first
that
one,
guy,
right?
Alex,
Matt, Alex and Farr and Strong.
Yeah,
and then I did one up at some place called Monty by the Terragram Ballroom downtown.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's like north part of Cape Town on whatever that is, Beverly?
Mm.
No, in Beverly, somewhere downtown that they're trying to make into a Manhattan. Okay, let's get you. Anyway, you know, Minutemen play with them cats 41 years ago. I remember playing with them in the city. And you never know, right? When you might be playing with those cats. Here's another thing I remember. I talked to people, like the last guest we had on, Portland cats named Supplemental Pills, and asked him about getting shit thrown at. And a lot of these younger bands have never had shit thrown at them. And what I remember about that gig with Flipper was getting hit, shit, puke, piss. I mean, the bodily things are pretty disgusting, but what hurts.
Yeah, I've had people spitting, like tons of people in London fucking spitting on us, and I like stopped and say, hey, man, we're not fucking, the Sex Pistols. Come on.
but I remember that gig with Flipper, I got hit in the chest with a batteries.
Oh,
now they hurt.
Oh shit!
Yeah, they hurt. I think our master volume has got too much value.
Coming down
because we're peaking her up. But it wasn't just opening for Black Flag, but it was opening for Primus, opening for Beastie Boys, Stone Temple Pilot. It didn't matter.
Oh.
In fact, the more new waves, the more they hated you. I mean, the guys in the band were cool. That's why we were playing. They asked us to be, open up. The audience don't want
that. Yeah, they came to see those
guys. Think it's a bum rush by management or something. I don't know what the fuck they did.
Yeah, we did a tour with Slayer in smaller clubs, which to us were giant anyway. But yeah, we didn't get spit on, but we never stopped. We would let everything feed back between songs and just never give them a chance to say, fuck you, Slayer.
Yeah, smart move. I saw it happen with the Ramones.
Silence.
I saw it with the Ramones with Black when Ronnie James Dio, Mob Rules, I think. Wow. It looked like sideways snowstorm on Joey.
Wow.
I couldn't believe all the shit flying at because the spotlight was on him, right? So at the Long Beach Arena. And it was just a fucking sideways snowstorm, like going through the grapevine when your headlights get all clogged up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that kind of shit.
Tom Araya was telling me that he was really shocked that we were one of the first bands that no one threw anything out. And I was like, what about Motorhead? And he was like, no, Lemmy was getting pelted with plastic cups.
Oh, man.
Yeah, talk about demeaning. Like, holy crap, Lemmy. What the fuck?
I'd rather get hit with a plastic cup than a glass beer. But let's get into your story of music. Chris, please bring your earliest musical memory.
Oh, shit. Record or live show?
Just music, right? Like, maybe say I'm riding in the car with my ma and pop, and they got the radio on or some shit.
Yeah, which I would say close, but no, my mother was in a bluegrass band when I was a kid.
Cool.
So it was really just these weirdos playing bluegrass with her, a bunch of hippies.
Okay, but then did you have instruments in the pad you grew up?
Yeah, there was shit everywhere, and I mean, I still have an old fucking Martin 00018 that this hippie guy gave to my mother because he liked her.
That's worth some bones. Did you jump on any of that shit as a kid?
What?
As a kid, did you jump on any of that shit?
Yeah, those guys taught me some shit, but it was really, you know, basic stuff. You know what I mean? Here's a D chord, you know.
Okay. Well, what about school? Were you in the marching band or choir or shit like that?
No, me and my friends were kind of, you know, a little later, we were the stoners who just kind of hung out in the basement of my friend's house and just jammed all day, you know.
Okay. Oh, but you were on the music tip.
Yeah, oh, totally. Yeah, with guys from my school, too. But the band stuff was really way too straight
for us.
Let
me ask you this. First record you bought with your own money?
Oh, The Cramps, Gravest Hits.
Nice.
Gravest Hits. That's a good one. Song of the Lord. I got to record in that studio.
In Memphis. Oh, wow. Holy shit.
Phillips Recording Services. And what about the first live gig you saw?
The first live gig. The very first, just to be honest, was Aerosmith, Toys in the Attic.
Oh, I remember. I think I saw the tour before that when ZZ Top opened and blew them away.
Oh, shit. Oh, yeah.
This is before the pink cowboy hats. But
Yeah,
they had the smallest setup for, you know, arena.
You were
talking small clubs, right? I never went to a club till movement and stuff. All I knew was arena rock. Because I'm 13 and 19. Good. 1970, I'm 13. So the first gig me and D Boone saw was T-Rex.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome.
Everybody says
holy
that.
Shit.
Right? First time I went to England, I went to the tree where he got killed. I met his son. He named his son Roland, right? Roland Bolin. He wanted to hear, because he was only one or two when his pop died, so he wanted to know about that gig, so I told him. So you kind of answered my question. Not after school, like graduating, but in the afternoon, you did the bedroom band, the basement band, garage band.
Yeah, the basement band, totally. Just hung out with my friends. We were all like skaters, and we just kind of hung out and skated and played rock music in the basement all day.
Okay, so who knew what to play what?
Well, a couple of my friends were drummers. I was just beginning to play guitar. There's some older kids who played guitar way better than I did.
Well, what made you go to guitar rather than go to drums? That hippie guy showing you the D chord?
Yeah, it's just the shit I learned from my mom's friends when I was a kid. Yes, totally. And then when I got to be about 14, I remember saying to my friends, like, hey, guys, we can actually play a show if somebody will sing, you know. And at 14...
Well, let me back up a bit. What kind of material? Were you writing songs yet?
Yeah, we were just starting to write shit, just kind of stupid, crazy shit.
So you didn't go through a phase of, like, copying? Me and D Boone, there was this period. We didn't write any songs until the movement. Because that's the way it was in the 70s. People just copied shit off records.
Yeah. And all the older guys that I was talking about, they all knew covers. And I was, like, super impressed. You know, they could do fucking, like, Bad Motor Scooter or whatever by Montrose.
That's
something like that.
Ronnie Montrose, right?
Yeah.
I saw it. Like, and Sammy Hagar opened
really
up for
it. Up. But then,
they didn't have a bass. The keyboard did the left hand on his organ.
Oh,
what was the other one? Rock the Nation. It sounded like...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Russo,
Rock the Nation,
Tom.
Yeah.
Don't tell them. I think we lost Ron Hunt. I think he killed himself with a bunch of pills.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
But he was a good guitar man, yeah, I got to say. So you dug those guys. I remember that's what it was. It was like building models. Like he could do that? He built that? You know, it ain't Don Garland's, but he built Don Garland's Swap, right? Number 21 or something. So... Can you remember, Chris, the first song you wrote?
It didn't really have a title. You know?
You can remember.
Nobody would sing. But yeah, I do. I remember. I can still play the riff to this day. Yes. It was kind of stupid. You know? I don't know.
And it's got no name, so it's called, like, first song I wrote that's got no name.
Yeah, totally. It was like I'm telling you. Like, nobody would sing. We just
nobody
would jam
would
forever.
You had two drummer friends. Forever. You were the guitar man. How'd you find... Come on, I'm kind of prejudiced this way, Chris, but who did you find for bass?
My best friend, Paul. Yeah.
Okay.
He got drafted.
And how did he get... Did he get drafted? You put him on the bass.
Yeah, well, he had a Precision. He had bought a Precision off some guy, so he had
That's a good first bass.
It really was. This was 70s, so he had some good shit. You know, it was a good bass. But he also had, like, a couple Strats. He was trying guitar also. Yeah, he was doing some guitar shit, and then it was kind of like, well,
we're
going to
talk about types. What type did you have for your first guitar?
My first guitar was a '69 SG.
Wow.
Yeah, single coil.
Was there a lot
Gibson
of money?
Soapbox.
Yeah, yeah. What? Those are the ones that Pete Town, you see him breaking them at Woodstock. I think they were called specials.
Yeah, $299 I spent on that, and I saved for months for that guitar.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look, I want to play Organ Donor. It's time for Organ Donor.
We'll be right back. I'm control. You know what's happening. Control.
Feel it, the weather. Up for grabs. Far from having new life, feels and looks completely dead. Feels and looks completely dead. Well, they've stacked them all up in concrete blocks. They've left all this totally open for property developers to make a fortune.
As long as you don't want to build houses, that's the way it seems to me anyway.
See, they are far too important for ordinary people.
Yeah.
Sterilised by greed. Sterilised by greed.
So I'm bringing it back to life, so I'm making it a playground for the world.
We spend billions every year on making missiles that are so powerful that they're redundant before they're made, because our only hope is to not use them. Why could we spend some of that money, just some of that money, on making this a nice place to live for everybody?
Watford Pedro show. We started that chunk of music off with Unsane to an organ donor. And then Sawako and Kosei Komatsu with Open in Morning. Cube, Watch Pot Boils. Model Home featuring Michael R. Bernstein with Fly on the Wall. Plus Dog Plus, I Know But I Don't Know. Some more Unsane. Scrape. Great, too. Scrape. God, that's a hard word. Because the image comes with it.
Yeah,
yeah. Can't wash it out of my fucking head. That. Right. Also, all the knee surgeries I had.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I feel the scrape. Right. And you with the knee, right? The fucking ACL. She's going to. This Susie Analog featuring 3RP Boo. Brand new Vex Party with Weird Weather. Noisuka, Red and Ho. The Big Swoop from Floating Problems. And finally, we're a little early, people, but November from Human Impact, which is what I think you got happening now, right? But we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Okay, so we could do a gig, guys, if somebody will say. Because at the moment, you guys are a power trio?
No, well, yes, basically. But we kind of had guys coming in and out, you know, anytime. Like, other friends would show up and just kind of use an amp that was there and shit.
Now, were you insane yet, or were you still the lawn chair blister or what?
No, we did. There was no name. We were just guys just fucking hanging out, jamming. We had no. That was kind of the issue. It was like
I've had people on the show, Chris. In fact, from Austin, there, Gary Floyd. Because dudes were scared to make the band. So what you would do is you'd make flyers of your band and put them around town and like shame guys into coming to Prac. So they would already have flyers before they even fucking play together. So you guys did it the other way, where you just jam without a name.
So it was like, okay, somebody's got to sing. And so nobody wanted to do it. It's hard when you're a kid, you know, when you're like 14, try finding somebody who really wants to sing, you know,
where you go? Because that sounded like junior high days, right? So I think if you want a singer.
Junior high, like.
Yeah, you're in junior high and you're looking for a singer. Don't look in the music department. Drama.
No.
Drama department. Yeah. You don't know how many dudes I've had on the show, Chris. The singer men, especially, that come out of drama.
Oh, shit. Yeah, they're like thespians.
So if you ever get bit in that Wayback Machine, you know what to do next time. So tell me about the first. So you guys do a gig without a name, and then, like, you're forced to be the singer man?
Yeah, I just kind of was like, okay, I'll give it a fucking shot. Somebody's got to do it. And just totally blew out my voice trying. You know, I had no idea what the fuck I was doing.
What about word-wise? Who comes up with the spiel?
Oh, I had to. Who else?
Okay, so did you have to deliver, you had to also compose.
Yeah, we were all just a bunch of stoners. Nobody really wants to have the spotlight on them. You know what I mean? It's like, that's too intimidating. You know?
Yeah, awkward.
Oh, totally, totally. So I had to try. Gave it a shot.
Tell me about that first gig.
It was just some shit at our high school, you know, and we just did what we could. It was semi-disastrous. But at the same time, we did it, and we got through it, and, you know, that was one step further into actually playing in a band that actually got out of the basement. So,
does this lead to getting a name?
It was kind of this really, our bass, well, Paul, my old friend, came up with this really stupid name, Amplified Rice. So that was initially what my
band from Genoa, Italy, called Rice on the Record. Kind of close.
Oh yeah, close. It's still in the rice sort of genre, you know.
Right. Okay, so I'm just going to abbreviate and say the rice. Now, where is it? What's next for the rice?
We just kept jamming, and then we just kept doing shit, and then eventually we were kind of playing sort of as one of the openers at older kids' proms and stuff. So we did that. We just kind of did high school shit, you know, around and played some shows at people's houses, crap like that.
What about pools? You said there was a skating thing happening.
Yeah,
right?
No, we were at that time I was in San Francisco.
Okay.
And we were all hill skaters.
Oh, yeah.
So there aren't really many pools
in San
Francisco.
Who's the bass guy up there?
Yeah, so
Tony,
it's fucking,
who's
it's
the bass
all the
player?
Really steep shit.
There's a bass player up there, Tony Gonzalez. I don't know. Who am I thinking? He's a friend of Ray Barbie and Chuck Treese and those guys. Yeah, he's a bass man. Because there's a crossover between skate guys and music guys. You know, Tony Independent, he was a bass man. Tony Alva. My fucking
Tony manager. Alva. Holy shit.
Yeah,
really?
But the Tony I'm thinking of up in the city was, he has a Latin name, Tony Gonzalez or... Tommy Guerrero, that's his name. Tommy Guerrero.
Tommy Guerrero. Oh my God.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Because he's kind of old timer, I guess. Not as old as Watt, but up there. Okay. So you still hadn't put skating together with music, or they were still different worlds?
Yeah. They were just two totally different things. Yeah, totally. It was we just kind of recreationally skated with this crew called Fogtown. Obviously a total ripoff of Dogtown, but San Francisco.
But you know what? Have you been to Pacifica? It gets foggy there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it sure does.
Right down from the abs, right?
So when
does the insane thing happen?
That when I was about 17, 18, I went back to New York. I grew up in Rochester, and then my mother moved out to San Francisco.
I just played there this last tour, Eastman Kodak and Xerox.
Wow. Yeah, my mother worked with Kodak. Yep.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
And
so
you go back. So the Unsane Forms in Rochester?
Wait, what?
The Unsane Forms in Rochester?
No, we were in New York. Okay. We were in, Manhattan, basically. Okay. Yonkers, really.
Yonkers, the north part, okay.
Yeah, north of the city. And then, so me and Pete and Charlie, they were just guys from my school.
Okay.
We met Charlie, he had a big bag of weed, and me and Pete was my roommate. So I just drafted my good friend to play bass, and kind of taught him the songs, and, I just had a Sun PA in my room. So we could, it was like a 4-channel PA, just an old Sun head with 4 channels. So we could basically plug anything in and run him out of that. And then
you're practicing in an apartment.
It was just like a cement room.
Okay.
Like a dorm
chamber.
Room at college. Yeah. So then
when you bring the motor, it's a gas chamber, right?
Yeah. It's probably like seal it up. But we heard there was a guy who had a drum kit and a big bag of weed.
Yeah.
Somebody on our dorm told us because we were using a drum machine. So we went over there and drafted Charlie. And we started out just doing noise shit. Like, we were really into, like, Throbbing Gristle and SPK and crap like that. So we'd do these long stoner noise
things. I think the last Throbbing Gristle gig until way later was in the city. Because we saw the one before in Culver City here. They blew out the PA in the first song.
Oh, shit.
And I met Genesis. Huh? Yeah, he did it with the bass. He was playing too loud. Huh. Oops. So you guys were big into Throbbing Gristle.
Oops.
Okay. We love that band, man. And every record was a different trip.
Yeah, totally.
Hamburger Lady.
One time I almost hit Genesis one time. We played this place, The Limelight, and it was just a total noise fest, sweat, and just really intense. And then this guy jumps up on stage and starts hugging me. And I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Get off me. And I fucking pushed back. And I looked at him, I was like, holy shit, that's fucking Genesis P. Orridge.
It happens. I'd rather get hit by a piece of Genesis than a piece of shit.
I didn't want to assault you, but, whatever.
So, tell me about the first Unsane gig.
I can't even remember the fucking name of the bar. It
that
was
happened.
This bar on Houston Street. We played with this band, the Reverb Motherfuckers. who really helped us out and gave us shows with them. They were local guys.
I remember those guys.
Oh, you do? Yeah, we were doing shows in down, Lower East Side, yeah. East Village, Manhattan. So, yeah, we hooked up with them and then did some shows, and we were just starting out, really.
Would you call that first gig was a success, like the school with the unnamed band?
Yeah, it was good, man. People were into it.
It was better.
I was really surprised because we were really noisy. We were really into just feedback and, just crazy, shrieking, loud fucking craziness. So that one went well. And then our drummer, Charlie, met John Spencer and Christina Martinez.
John was
in Pussy Galore at the time, and he was like, "Yeah, you guys, if you want, you can share a practice space with us down on Avenue B." So then we moved into their practice space, and it was us, Pussy Galore, and Cop Shoot Cop, and a band called Railroad Jerk at one point.
I think Cop Shoot Cop had two basses.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
Natch and Todd Ashley. Right. Yep.
Look.
Yeah, so that was kind of our crew.
We gotta put a little pause. I know you're a rebel without a pause, but I got to put one here because we're at the end of the first hour, Chris. Sasha 17, 2022, just what? Peter's a special guest. Chris Spencer, hold tight for hour two. August 17, 2022, it's the second hour of the What for Pedro show.
Everything that I wanted is gone. Nothing before me now but pain. Nothing before me but pain. And your voice. Your voice, of course. Someday I'll reach you. In my dreams I can reach you. Waiting to die.
Pedro Show. Start off second hour, Unsane with Vandal X. X or 10? Roman numeral 10.
X.
Okay.
It was this stuff that we used to get the graffiti off our van when we left on tour.
Oh, I used some of that shit. What was it called? Here they give it, it starts with an S. But I had to use some because some green spray paint. Luckily, I got it within an hour and a half.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Because it was I have a white Econoline, white so the whole fucking.
Yeah, we had a white Chevy 10, and okay. It was fucking in the Riverside of Man.
Those are like quarter ton. You don't want to tour in a 10. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
We did.
Balls
we did
out,
forever.
Chris. Balls out.
And it had no insulation. It was just fucking.
No, those were like urban straight sixes and like for phone company vans. Those ain't for touring. Okay,
no,
track pile after that.
But we did like Canada in February in that thing and fucking slept in. We'd be in the loft and fucking mummy down sleeping bags. Fucking
we called it the shelf, right?
Off,
the conch sex, yeah, mummy sex. Like we had chat pile from Oklahoma City after that. Brand new Pamela, Horde of Two with No One Owned Anyone. Human Impact. This is. Current thing with Contact, Witch Egg. This is John Dwyer from OC. He's got a new band, instrumental. He's getting into this instrumental stuff. Your Hatless Friend.
Oh, that's a trippy.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah,
pull your pants up, John. Pull your pants. Arthur Comics. Now, this was the Blue Oyster Cult before they had Eric Bloom or Joe Bouchard in the band. And then Unsane with Against the Grain. Okay, so you guys were touring Canada in a Chevy 10, criminy. I remember Minuteman Black Flag used Billy Steven, the Descendant drummer man. His daddy's Chevy 20 burned that baby up in one tour. There's all 10 of us in there. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You guys knew how to be more empathetic to your machinery. So where did you guys record your first Unsane stuff? I remember Thirst had a buddy named Wharton Tears, and I think maybe it was Wharton, huh?
Yeah, it was Wharton. Yeah, it was in his basement.
I got to John record there Wharton. With Bob Quine.
Huh.
Yeah, and everybody said he's going to tear your head off. He's a mean man, but he was really nice.
Oh, shit.
So it shows to go you, right? Wait till you meet him. Maybe he's mean to them for a reason.
Yeah.
So Wharton Tears, yeah, I love the guy. He's got a proj going where because he's a drummer man, and I love the idea of drummers leading bands. Why not?
Yeah, yeah.
And then
Wharton's cool, man. He's really nice, and he really helped us out. It was not expensive, you know, it was super cheap, and we could just do it in his basement.
Yeah,
more basement rock, you know.
Right, right. And then you had bad luck with your drummer, right?
Yeah, Charlie OD'd in 92, but we've been going for a long time. You know, we started in like 88, so we've been going about 4.5 years, you know, and just fucking living together in the van. We were doing like 8-week tours consistently, you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
So,
Black Flag would do 100 gig tours, they'd do 4-month tours.
Oh, my God.
Kay would fly up back to UCLA, take her midterm. She still got an engineering degree, but
shit.
It was kind of tough. Yeah.
Yeah, holy crap. Yeah,
so,
I thought
okay,
8 weeks
okay.
was bad.
So 4 years. You know what? In band lifetime, that is kind of a long time.
Yeah, it seemed long.
But also too, Chris, I will say, in the older days, it seems things changed a lot quicker than they do these days. Seems things nowadays stay the same for a longer period of time.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
In those days, things change. God, especially if you go back to the 70s, man. The first punk stuff, you know, like in Hollywood and stuff. Man,
yeah.
Things changed like by the month.
Yeah, exactly. A year was a long time.
Yeah,
you know?
Way long time. Way too long time and stuff. And, I remember ranking Jeffrey Lee Pierce, you know, writing ska reviews in Slash. And then he got a band called Gun Club.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And then the Bags bass player marries the singer of the Damned. And so anyway, you lose your drummer, man. That's sad. And he was.
But you
guys were really young, though, right?
Well, no, I was old enough. I was like 24, 25.
Yeah, but if you're together 4 or 5 years, that means you started in your teens, as Unsane.
Yeah, well, no, 21, 20. So I was 25, yeah.
Okay. Okay, so. Yeah, that's where you went to college, van school.
Yeah,
that's you know, and if you call a tour more than a month, I just did my 67th one. So I'm way into it. I'm like you, a true believer about that stuff. But what did you do, man, when you lose a guy like that? Now he's the guy with the motor, right? He wasn't the guy from old school.
Yeah, we had done one show. Jim Thirlwell from Fetus had
I remember Jim.
Had asked us.
Australian guy, right?
The what?
Australian guy.
Yep. And then he had asked me and Pete and Charlie to be his backing band, but then to also have two drummers and add a drummer, this guy Vincent Signorelli, who... So we had done this one show that was just like a 18-minute noise epic with Jim singing, and we had the two drummers, and we had a European tour coming up, so we just sort of said to Vinny, hey, man, will you just fill in on drums for this tour, and we'll see how it goes and see if you want to hang out after that. So he did that tour, and then he wanted to stay. So we stuck with him. But then along the way, too, there was one tour Vinny was hurt. I played with Dale Crover and Cody Willis. Yeah, we did tour with Melvins, and those guys, their drummer, because they had two drummers at the time, they filled in with us.
Cody!
You know? So there's,
was Cody on the drums?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What's that?
Cody.
Yeah, Cody Willis. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Big Business, right?
Yep.
That was a good version of the Melvins.
Yeah, that was, man. That was awesome. They were really good. Yeah.
But
brutal.
You lose your bass player?
Eventually, yes. Pete dropped out. We had this we were starting to do kind of bigger tours, and Pete just kind of lost interest in mainstream shit. So
it happens.
Yeah.
I think it's better than going the other way.
you get it. You start doing these bigger things, and it's like it just becomes kind of a grind, I guess, for some people. I just fucking feel thankful I get to play all the time.
Everybody comes from different places. You think about that guy who was that poet man, Arthur Rimbaud. He only writes poems 2 years, and that's it. Shit. And he was still a teenager, and then he's running guns in Abyssinia. You know, some people, it's just a little hitch, and other people, it's their life thing. Elvin Jones dies on stage with oxygen tanks, right?
Yeah.
I think just people are different, not bad or evil or good. It's just different.
Yeah. People just have different priorities. Yeah. He wanted to go into fine art, so he was working for Disney for a while after that. You know, once after he quit, he really dove into it.
Yeah,
so.
Don't want to get into mainstream shit, right?
Yeah, I know. There you go. Totally. What the fuck?
Fucking mouse rock. Okay, so who do you get on bass?
So we got Dave Curran, who actually, our manager found us a guy, and we were at that time we were doing this Biohazard tour, and the guy was kind of flaky, and I sat down with him. I taught him all this. I told him the whole set and everything. And the first three shows of the tour, he just fucks up every night repeatedly. And I was saying to him, like, hey, man, I'll sit around with you all day, and we just go through this shit until you really know it. And then he, you're putting me down and stuff. I'm like, no, we just need to play right, you know. But then our sound guy was a guitar player, had played some bass. And me and him would sit in the hotel and jam after shows. We'd be actually just playing music after the show at the hotel. And I was like, hey, Dave, you can do this. You could actually play the bass. So then we got our sound guy to learn the entire set between Las Vegas and L.A.
Wow.
And we had, what?
Wow. I mean, that's great. Another sound man story who joins the band is, no means no, right? They get that guy.
It was just
the brothers, and then they got he who cannot be named. But he lives in Holland, people. He can't be named. I just can't think of it right now.
Dave learned the set, and we played the Whiskey that night. Dave
Whiskey Go Go in West Hollywood.
What?
The Whiskey Go Go in West Hollywood.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Yeah, I remember we weren't allowed to play there. Minuteman was a violent SST band. Uh-huh. You know what got us in there? Fear.
Oh, shit. Wow.
I remember going into the dressing room to shake Lee Ving's hand, but John Belushi was handing him the pipe, the glass pipe, with the torch.
Oh, shit.
So you guys are busy. Wow. Young man, I'd like to talk to you. Excuse me.
Yeah,
what happened at this gate, Chris?
Wait, what?
What happened at the Whiskey with you guys?
Oh, so Dave just pulled the whole thing off. Didn't make one mistake. And he learned it.
Shows to go, you. Some people, the lesson here is jam with the sound man. Don't use the pick from the manager, man.
Yeah, totally. I know. But no, yeah, the manager did not know, you know, shit from Shinola, so to speak. So, you know.
All right, Chris. Look, it's about that time now for Brother Bat Spins Thing.
All right, here we go. Second week of technical difficulties. Checking out side two of English as a Second Language.
For 1980, considered a nice guy, my message is don't take shit from people that you shouldn't take shit from. Don't be nice to people that don't deserve it. Help people that are going to help themselves. Don't do things for flakes. Don't do things for dishonest people. Don't do things for people that step on you. That way you'll have a lot more time and energy to do good things for the people that deserve it.
The blood will trickle, spurt, then gush, the way cheap paint spills into shallow buckets. No one will know anything happened until a horrible stench forces my landlady to break into my apartment and find my defunct flesh lying on the fetid, stained carpet. She starts to cry as she thinks to herself, she didn't even pay this month's rent. Her meaty little fingers replace the receiver, and minutes later a few taciturn men in careful white coats remove my body. A large-eared neighbor drools as the carpet is being shampooed for the new tenant. He hopes it will be another young girl, so he can break in and rape her.
Old White Women on Vermont. It's no longer Benson's Drugstore, it's Alvarez Botanica, and the old white women walk alone through crowds of young Latins, like forgotten relics of a past world, frowning at loud radios and the babies crying from apartment windows. The old white women on Vermont wait on bus stops, wearing musty gray day coats and large black hats, wait for something, their pink skin sweating in the brown heat.
Goodbye, pork pie cravat. That's C-R-A-V-A-T, English spelling. There is a box, and in the box is a bag, and down at the bottom, busted open with the cotton removed, in the brain and belly of Lester, there is a bump on the head of Lester that, he says, oh, look, it's working already. It's such an unsightly bump. There is an edge, and the edge is Lester's home and hearth, 365 endless big ones a year. Spin on that axis so that Lester may spin with the wind. There is a smell, worse than Lester, but no one has smelt it. There is a cleaned-up Lester, alleged, smelling like roses, but the roses are dead. There is an urn in El Cajon with petals scorched and blistered, smelling like John Morthland's Luckies in a tray. There is a life, and in this life, so-and-so is fucked.
U.S. pregnancy. My belly is a bowl of neon and sawdust scraps. Yours is full of beer and baby shrimp now. What have we created? A load of bricks and snot? No. American biology. Blue chip stamps for diapers. Visa for the crib. Someone has to expel it. Create some bloody familial linkage. Snap go the bonds. Crackle goes the labor. Pop goes the uterus of this boisterous playpen, the sugar-coated Havana that feeds a family of 4.4. The glory of love. Fat, juicy worms slide all over the glory of love, coating it with a mucus, a membrane that directs impulse to spew, cerebral lust to melt like cheese in hidden ovens. Soldiers bear guns while sunning, or sleeping under rocks, or eyeing distant prey. Some come with dressy symbols that leer, or chew sticky tributes, creating somber puzzles or helpful IDs. Oh couplet, oh cutlet, oh parallel, oh buzzard, oh vestige, oh organ, oh seedling, oh fast, oh air, oh loop, oh bell, oh marriage, oh cripple, oh bitch, oh telephone. Who am I, mourns the flyer, the dollop, the dark statuette, the tricky diaper who thinks I do love you. This is Untitled. A is for nipples that pinch like thorns. B is for schoolgirls who look like meat. C is a friend who crawls like bugs. D is a pity that smothers like blight. E is my dream of Lewis McAdams. A is for schoolgirls who pinch like thorns. B is for nipples that look like meat. C is a pity that crawls like bugs. D is like blight that smothers my dream. E is a friend of Lewis McAdams. A is for thorns who pinch like meat. B is for pity that crawls like nipples. C is a friend who smothers like schoolgirls. E is Lewis. This is a public service. Deposit gift on doorstep. Run hard if after three. Leave calling card in grass. Remove glasses. Remove top skin. Remove gloves. Catch blood in funeral urn. Wrap with arteries and sperm. Record pulse. Attach to packaging. Ring bell. Smile. Deposit bomb like Bon Voyage.
Very carefully cut the wing from the body, and he'd hold his knife like it was a pencil, and then these movies would come on the screen, and you'd see all these bodies falling down the ground, and then you'd see all these people lying on the ground dead, and then you'd read books that freak you out. Weird things that would happen.
Once upon a time, a young rock and roll fool went out about his merry way, trying to get that super airplay, singing, hey, look at me, I think I'm on my way. Caught up in his rock and roll dream, singing, hey, look at me, I think I'm on my way. Suddenly across his climbing fever, a proud delight, Old Man Zack speaks. Kid, this ain't no sightseeing tour. Kid, this ain't no mere nightmare country. No twilight dream. This ain't no Alice Cooper Wonderland. Kid, this ain't no master plan. This ain't no Scandinavian scandal. This ain't no Knoxberry farm. This ain't one of those Hollywood wax museums. And we ain't lost in nobody's lying country's far. This ain't no long lost walk from Chinatown. This ain't Rita Jean Bodine trying to get off the ground. No coat hanger was strapped for sacks. An old coat hanger was strapped for sacks. And I said, this just can't be real. This man stood out in the rain, said he was waiting for fame, but he didn't have a name. An old coat hanger was strapped for sex. An old coat hanger was strapped for sex. And I said, this just can't be real. Just then the man jumped up the screen. He said, kid, this ain't no rock and roll dream. He said, kid, this ain't no sightseeing tour. He said, kid, it's really, really real. Look at me, look at me. I'm a clown. chuckling the wine bottles up by the ground. Look at me. I'm a clown. I'm a clown. Chuckling wine bottles up by the ground.
He walked the tracks into town. We all rode out in our cars, met him there, and told him to turn around. I didn't know what a Negro was. I saw metal gates on liquor store windows in Chicago. I asked my mother why. She said, burglars. What are burglars? Negroes. The first time I saw one, my mother said, roll up the car windows and lock the doors. He had a scar across his forehead. In fact, his head was split in two. Years later, when I met him, he autographed my cocktail napkin. Stay pretty, Percy Mayfield. And he kissed me twice.
Give me a beat. A heavy beat. Let's work up some heat. Let's get the natives on their feet. Get me some hooks and some different looks to catch some fish, tons of fish. Demographic USA spending dollars every day on video games, on booze and drugs. What is art? What is pop? When does art become pop? What the masses like today, then the cult goes away. 20 billion million songs, 95% the same. Hey, when a band sounds great, move them out, it's getting late. Who determines what they pay? A&R in L.A., flathead doing blow all day. There's gotta be a better way of blowing dough a different way. This music business, one big mess of tits and dicks and little spoon bartender. Please just one more round, I'm really sad, I'm really down. Give me a break, give me a break.
This is a section from a long prose piece called A Herd. The woods were dark and cool at all times. They invited people in at their edges. But miles and miles deeper they stretched and congealed. No one went there. Animals retraced their step for this or that foggy belief. Little else knew or availed itself of that beauty. Someone would stagger in loss, starving or wounded, fall and die, then disappear into animals' mouths. Then one day, much later, maybe men would hike in and carry away the white sketch left behind. They would speak angrily, but nothing around them could understand, so they left things as they were. If there was a God, he would have liked to lift the cities up in the air with a wave of huge hand and plunge them into the woods, then drop them back at their seasides and in their valleys. He liked the idea of that mixture and grew tired of both the city's sharpness and the woods' sleep. Wake the woods up, calm the cities down. But he couldn't do this for unknown reasons. He could only pour rain on the buildings or snow when he was angry. And into the woods he pointed a hunter once in a while. Deep in the house, he turned boys over and over like things on a fire and examined them and opened them up. The man was learning real secrets, and he was growing too powerful. God was jealous. Stripping a boy, killing him, would not give God much pleasure. Humans were small. God would have to look through a spyglass until his arm ached. God wanted to cover the city with ice, but thought better of it. Slow down, he told himself. God lifted the roof off the man's house while he was busy over his victim. There was the man rummaging through a drawer full of tiny, sharp objects. God barely understood them. There was the boy covered with blood. There they were together making love. God lowered the roof in its niche. He leaned back until the house, then its city, became a small dot on the earth. Less than a dot. The earth was a dot, the most interesting one of the planets. God was flying backward through space, arms and legs stretched out before him like streamers. He looked a little like Martin Balsam when he flailed the front stairs in Psycho. But God was laughing, not shrieking, and that was how he would stay.
All right, it's called Autograph. To find I've done the difficult things all my life, but the less complicated have been somehow neglected through it all. Never rode a two-wheeler, never danced a two-step, never came down off a wave at Malibu Beach. Oh, no. But I've chased tornadoes in Pontiac, Michigan, and falling stars in Fairfield, Iowa. I've avoided wars and following leaders. I split my personality in Pasadena at an early age. I kept waking up in gardens with Franciscan nuns stripped to the waist. I cheated at cards in a broken-down motel room in Reno. I governed Orange Grove graveyards under an assumed name. I married the boss's daughter and got strange raises. I forced Hollywood movie producers to make girls come alive, just like a Pepsi Generation Marquis de Sade. And oh yeah, once, just once, did I ever write my autograph.
Unfurl the black flag, John Haig. The banner you and your lady fashioned for me to carry on the 4th of July. The parades in Venice, USA. Fly the black flag of freedom and mutual aid in memory of my camarada, the Dove, who perished from a cancer, aided and abetted by the destroyer of white corpuscle soldiers. Chemotherapy. Chemotherapy, funded by the non-taxable charitable Judeo-Christian grants, propagandized by middle-class privatized idiots who must also perish from chemotherapy, as they will.
My name is Henry. I come from Washington, D.C. I'm in a band called SOA. Got my own job. I got my own apartment. I shave my head every other day or so. My name is Henry. I sing in the band called Black Flag. People ask me why I look like
this. I've been
in
Black Flag about 2 years. I moved out here to California.
Came to work the other day
on
Washington, D.C. And this preppy
and
guy,
I live by the beach. I like to hang out on
my
beach.
Head. It's pretty cool.
I have a bald head.
I get to go swimming and check out all kinds of shit
in my pocket.
And me and all the guys in the band, we go all over the place. We play in the United States and all over Europe and all over Canada and stuff like that.
It's got a problem.
The main stuff I do with my whole life, like right now, is like with Black Flag.
Once every 2 months, we're gonna do a record.
It's rewarding and frustrating and all that shit.
I never talked to my parents
together
because they're just fucked up.
Mom's is a bitch. If I rip my hands on my dad, I'm gonna fucking kill him.
Fuck.
I live by my store,
a place called SST, which is about as big as this place in here, with about 8 people living in it. And
I see him. There's a girl
I don't mean to harp or anything. I'm not trying to come on with any kind of rap or anything.
But I don't give a fuck.
You know, sometimes it gets pretty fucked.
I hang with my friend to go to sleep, and someone's fucking, like, you know.
Why do I do all this stuff?
I don't know. Happening right next to you.
Nothing else to do
like that, but it's pretty cool.
You ask me why I'm like this.
It's pretty cool. I get happening.
I'm like this because I'm scared. I'm scared of everything. That's why.
Well, it's not much to tell you.
I don't have much to say these days.
I like to fight.
It's kind of trying to show. Doing.
Brother Matt, let us know what made you do what you did to us in our ear holes with your spin cycle this week.
Well, the technical difficulties continue there till we got the replacement parts coming. So
you understand, people, we don't have all the media playback materials, machinery.
Down to one input right now.
Right.
So we bust out that old early 80s crackling vinyl.
Actually, it comes from a time when we only had that.
Yeah. So it's real.
So it is real. But Brother Matt's got plans.
Harvey Kubernick there with the English as a Second Language side 2. We're looking for new replacement parts. Right. But in the meantime, we got a couple more sides.
Because a lot of your beats is CD housed.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
so.
The vinyl is from the era actually kind of before the Beats. The Splongle era.
So
but
there
anyway,
you have
it still was bitching, Brother Matt. Thank you so much for bringing
Thank
it.
You.
Yes, absolutely. Ox 17, 2022. It's the third hour of the Watford Pedro Show.
Yeah.
pungent scent of freshly cut grass wafted through the balmy summer evening air. As I plowed the mower into the shaggy lawn, I needed to finish by 7:22. Give me plenty of time to get inside for my favorite primetime animated adventure show, Johnny Quest. Myself an alcoholic coach in anticipation of the
Wofford Pedro Show. Start off third hour with the Cutthroats 9 with Dirty. And then Mini Beast, which is Peter from Mission to Burma. He's playing guitar now instead of drums. A few thoughts about thought crimes in 1969. Mold Omen out of Baltimore with One Very Long Blink. Port Sunshine out of Hamburg with Blue Blue Sky. Finally, Unsane with Empty Cartridge. And Chris is going to enlighten us to the Cutthroats 9.
Yeah, so 1999, Unsane was taking a little break because we've been doing a shit ton of touring. And I went up to San Francisco and met up with a friend of mine, this guy Will Carroll, who now plays drums, strangely enough, in Death Angel. But yeah. But he was a fucking prodigy, man. The guy is an incredible drummer. And I convinced him to use a single kick pedal. and we just did it because we were friends. We just did it because we wanted to just, the band had 12 bass players.
You know? Whoa!
Yeah. Over just like 3 years. I think we did have 12 different people play bass at different times. So it was kind of me and him just doing a project. And just getting in the van and fucking traveling around doing shows again, back to fucking doing the down and dirty, gritty kind of, you know, bar drunken fest, you know.
Yep. It was
fun as hell. That band was amazingly fun.
Why Cutthroats 9? There was only three at a time, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a power trio. Yeah. Again, as that's pretty much all I've ever done, except for Human Impact, where we have a keyboard player who does samples. Because Jim is from Cops Who Cop, the guy who's in Human Impact.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah. I knew him from before he was in Cop, and when Unsane was just barely, you know, a fetus. So I wanted to play with Jim later. But so I have the kind of habit of just playing with my friends, you know, playing music with my friends. To me, that's kind of what makes it worthwhile.
That's what Raymond Pettibone told me once. He says bands should be about friends playing together instead of business arrangements or, you know, weird
shit. Yeah, fuck all that shit, man. I don't want to have it be like some fucking, you know, trudge fucking bummer.
Right. I remember seeing a Pink Floyd Anaheim, maybe it was Animals, and it was four limos. You could see, you know what I mean? You could see them wheel in, and they were all, And then they each had another dude doing their music parts on stage. I mean, it was just all pretendo, the whole fucking thing.
Yeah,
I want to play Cracked Up. That's a great tune.
Hold your breath and steal a kiss. You know the night is on our side. 14 years, 12 below. Now there's nothing left to hide. Tell your ma I swear I'll write her when the time is right. Fill those arms with brick dust, babe, and won't you take me home tonight? There's nothing left to say. Old strong out like Jesse James, I saw you waltzing down the aisle. Dose me up to kingdom come and let me stay there for a while. But you just got the best of me.
Watford Pedro Show, last music for this edition. And same with Cracked Up. Then Hogwind. Here's a band from the city. This guy, I don't know, you ever meet a guy up there called Grux? He had this band called Rainbow Carolina, and they'd always change it to some fucking shit. I mean, you talk about noise. I mean, this guy, the album covers, right? They put a sack of dirt in the fucking, very individualistic. I remember playing with them. They had two lead singers at the time. Minuteman were going on after him. One guy's dressed like the beast, like fucking Ad Rock or something. And he flips over.
Shit.
And he, sideways baseball hat shit. And he flips over on his back. And he bends over and he whoops out, like, not just whoop it out. He fires out this, like, foot long big rubber dildo out his yang. And it flew across the stage. I looked at D. Boone and said, how are we going to fucking down do that? D. Boone said, it was like, you guys, don't stop. You know, don't stop. Okay, well, anyway, he's got this band. It's called Hogwind and Einstein's End of Neubeatles 2-2. It was live last month. SLWMBB Jr. with Grind Me in Faith from Iowa City, Electra Capra, right? Electra Goat, because they're from Italy. Santana El Mare, Head Cut with Tears, Send for the Whiskey, Curse of Lono, and then finally, Unsane with Fix It. Not Fix Me, but Fix It. Remember, Flag had a song called Fix Me.
Fix It?
No, they had one called Fix Me, right?
Fix me.
Right? Fix me, please. I don't want to be dead. Just fix me. So, I think it was on Nervous Breakdown. Don't have Robo. It has some guy they had. He ate a lot of Quaalude, they told me. He never could hold the beat. I can't remember his name. Right.
Wait, he was a drummer?
Yeah.
And he ate
Quaalude. The same guy who played drums in Dukowski's band before that? Worm.
Okay. Huh. Wow, memory, that sounds really, really fucking detrimental to be eating Quaaludes playing drums.
Yeah. Migdal. His name is Migdal.
He's the guy
who's actually on that 7-inch. It ain't Robo. Robo's, I think the first thing Robo's on is six-pack or clocked in off Christ in the Sock. But getting back to, let's talk about Human Impact, because that's what you're doing right now, right? Correct.
Yeah, and I'm also, we're reissuing Todd Cote, my manager, got all the rights to my shit back over COVID.
Great.
Yeah, man, I couldn't believe it. I fucking tried forever, and labels don't really acknowledge the actual band member. You know what I mean? So you get a third party to get out there and fucking tell him he has a lawyer. And people are pretty more responsive. I mean, so a lot of the labels I've been on, well, again, I've been with, like, friends. Tom Hazelmeyer or, you know, they're just people I know. But then there are others like Relapse who are trying to hold out on you. You know, I'd call them and be like, hey, I think I have the rights back to this record. And they're like, oh no, you signed this and this. And I'm like, well, send me the contract. They won't do it. But anyway, so Todd got all of my shit back.
Yeah.
So we're reissuing all the first shit. We're starting out chronologically from the beginning.
Yeah.
And reissuing the first self-titled record. So me and my friends from Austin, my friend Eric Cooper and John Civison from Daughters are just playing the early shit. We're just going out and doing the early shit for a tour that starts in October in Europe. So we're just doing 6 weeks of that. And then we start writing, and then I'm back to writing more shit with Human Impact.
Okay.
So I'm kind of doing both.
And where people want to find you on the internet, what's the best place for them to go to?
Just Unsane Bandcamp. They can get anything, you know, all our shit.
So you got all the stuff on the Bandcamp page now. Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. And, you know, about that, what would your advice be to younger people, especially now when you can set up your own Bandcamp page and maybe you don't even have to go to a label?
Yeah, that's a little weird because Todd actually also set me up with a company called Virtual Label, which they just fulfill orders for you. Like, you press the records, you get all the shit done, and you get somebody to do publicity shit, and then they just fucking fulfill orders and keep track of all the money coming in, or all the pennies coming in from digital shit.
Right.
You know, but they just kind of keep track of all that shit for you and then kind of give you a statement every 3 months. So it's a fucking big, there's so much shit and so many different places to get, you know, to sort of keep track of doing this. I mean, I think if you're just starting out, if you can swing it and you want to tour, just tour like hell, do that Bandcamp page and press your own records. It is possible, but you kind of need somebody to do some publicity for you. You know what I mean? Because tree falls in the woods, nobody hears it.
Right,
you know
right. And there's a lot of cats out there playing.
Yeah, totally.
To book a tour now, I try to tell people about booking tours. You got to be almost a year out now.
Yeah, no shit. I know, man. You got to be like 9 months to a year out at this point.
Yeah.
And especially after COVID, because everybody fucking wants
to go play again, right?
Yeah, no shit. I know.
So, okay, so go out there and play. Also, your band's going to get better. And what about songwriting? Is it harder to write songs from way back?
What, from way back? What do you mean?
You. In your career.
Oh. Was it harder to write songs at the beginning?
No, right now. Is it harder to write songs than it was back then?
No, I don't think so. No.
Because some people, you know, they run out of gas, right?
Yeah, they run out of shit. Yeah, no, I don't think so. Me personally, I just kind of make, I mean, I kind of, my brain
There must have been a reason for Human Impact, right? Well, you like playing with your friends.
Yeah, I like playing with Jim. And Jim does all this crazy fucking electronic shit.
Sure.
So then, and also, you know, in the songwriting process, he just cough up a couple like keyboard things, and then I can be like, well, I can write a bass line for this, and then I can write guitar for that, and then
you write
I can
bass lines?
On it. Yeah, of course.
Okay, no, I didn't know. All of a sudden, Watt's ears got about 500 feet across. So what you're saying is the way to stay fresh is bring fresh cats. Yeah, different angles.
Yeah, different angles, and even, I mean,
like
if I just sit
with
down with a drum
stuff.
Machine, if I just sit down with a drum machine and do a beat, then I can think of some shit for that. I can make shit up pretty easy. I don't like to get too complicated. I just want to keep it fucking simple and as powerful as possible.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't really...
And you never worry about it not sounding like Chris Spencer.
Yeah, I mean, it always does, kind of. I don't know.
In my book, it does. All these projects sound very close.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks.
Okay.
It's going to be fun.
Beautiful. Come back on the show anytime you want, Chris, please.
Cool. Thanks, Mike.
Okay. People, August 17, 2022, this is Watt Peterson. So keep your powder dry.